All right. Ready?
Yeah.
Okay. My name is Mary Klein. I'm 72 years old. I was born in Richlands, Virginia, on November 16th, 1946.
Awesome. Thank you. Okay, cool. Could you talk a little bit about how your place of birth, like in Virginia, affected your kind of upbringing and your future beliefs?
Sure. Where I was born is the southwestern tip of Virginia. So it's in the Appalachian Mountains, and I think even though I left there when I was a small child, I left there when I was five, just the fact of having that in my background was really big in my life, although probably at the time I didn't realize it. I mean, I thought of myself as Southern. My mother and my grandmothers were both very Southern in their speech, in their cooking style, in their belief systems, and I think it was something that reached way back in my lineage that I didn't even realize at the time. But you know, my families on both sides of my family have been living in the southern United States since the early 1700s. And somehow that kind of seeped into my being. And I've always thought of myself as a southern person.
Awesome. Thanks for your answer. cool. My next question is, it's kind of related, how did growing up in the South influence your like political beliefs? Like, did you ever feel like you were pressured to like adhere to a certain political party, or like were your parents ever like playing a role in your political like ideology, I guess?
Well, that's really interesting because my mother never discussed politics. My father was a dyed-in-the-wool Republican, Southern racist, and never made any bones about it. And I was always very leery of that. The first real political interest I remember having was when John Kennedy was running for president. And, you know, I can remember my father just ranting and raving about him being a Roman Catholic and Irish and, you know, and a Democrat to boot. And for some reason, my father just hated Roosevelt. And I could never figure that out. But he was Republican to the core. And I just always, even as a kid, thought in the other direction. And the interesting thing was, you know, when Kennedy was assassinated, I was a senior in high school, and they had a big church service at the First Presbyterian Church downtown for that. And my father and I went. We were the only two that went to that from our family. And looking back on it, it's very interesting that although he despised everything that Kennedy stood for, he still went to this remembering service for him at his assassination, which I thought was interesting. So, you know.
Yeah, it is very interesting.
I think my reaction was the opposite, to believe practically the opposite of what he believed and what I assume the rest of my family believed. I mean, it's not like we were a big political family, but I was, as I got to be a teenager and got more interested in what was going on politically, I was definitely an outsider.
Could you like talk a little bit more about Kennedy's assassination? Like, do you think it kind of like shaped your like perspectives in any way? Like,
Oh gosh. Yeah. Well, you know, he was so different from any other political person that I had ever been aware of. I mean, his predecessor was Dwight Eisenhower, you know,
yeah.
A really old, white, bald guy, you know, and he was young and handsome and had little children and a beautiful wife and talked about ideals and what we were capable of and how we could lead this country to a new way of thinking. And, you know, he just captivated people. And I can distinctly remember exactly where I was when I heard he was shot. I was a senior in high school. And I was, for some reason, I must have been gone to run an errand. I was standing outside a classroom door. And the kids lowered the flag to half staff.
Mm.
And it just tore me up, you know? I'll never forget that. It was a real defining moment in my youth, that visual image of the flag being lowered.
Yeah.
You know, saying that the president was dead. I mean, nobody could believe it. The school was just like in total silence. It was really bizarre. And I was on the yearbook staff, and that's the picture we put in the yearbook that year in remembrance of him, was just the flag at half staff. Because it really told the whole story, you know. And I think it, for some people, it signaled like the end of this dream that young people had.
Yeah.
That we, and interestingly enough, Johnson, who was not a romantic figure at all, a good old Texas boy, but he was the one that pushed through all the things that Kennedy had fought for and could never get past. But because Johnson had been in the Senate for so long and was a dyed-in-the-wool politician and knew how to make deals left and right,
yeah,
he pushed everything through.
Could you talk more about Johnson? Do you remember his like policies and stuff, and like if they had any like impact on your own life, like his whole war on poverty,
right.
And like the creation of Medicare and Medicaid and stuff? Did that ever like impact you directly?
Yeah, I think he was kind of a dark horse. You know, I think we expected reform from Kennedy, but the fact that Johnson was the one that actually did it was surprising. I mean, he was a Texan, you know, he was an old guy. He had all the prejudices and all the belief systems of the old self that, you know, people were trying to get rid of. And yet he was the one that pushed for the Voting Rights Act, for the war on poverty, for Medicare. He was the one that got these systems in place to make life better for, you know, so many people that were the platform that Kennedy ran on in the first place. And I think what really was his undoing was his stance on the Vietnam War.
Mm.
You know, he was, I don't know, fed information that probably wasn't exactly True, and you know, he was really gung-ho on the Vietnam War, and that turned a lot of young people who liked his domestic policy against him because of, you know, the violent hatred of the Vietnam War, you know.
Yeah, I was actually wanting to talk to you about the Vietnam War. Like, did you ever like how did growing up during the Vietnam War kind of influence your life? Did you ever like participate in any of like the protests or anything, or were you kind of just like did you just like know about it?
I graduated from high school in 1964,
Hmm.
so there were boys in my class who went to Vietnam, and I know of at least one, Demetrio Cruz, who died in Vietnam. And you know, I had two brothers, an older brother and a younger brother, and I can remember discussing going to Canada. Bobby said he'd go to Canada if he ever got drafted, and Johnny said no, he'd go, he'd be drafted, which I thought was interesting. And of course, having gotten married at such a young age, John was 1A in the draft cycle. You know, that means you could be drafted at any time. And he had to go and take the physical and do all that stuff. And the only reason he was deferred was because he was on his way to seminary, and they gave deferments for men who were in seminary. So it hit pretty close to home, you know, during that time. I don't remember. I was living in Orlando then, and I don't remember any, you know, big anti-war rallies or anything there. Of course, we saw them on the news every night, but I don't ever remember it there being any kind of big demonstrations in Orlando during the war. I just there was a lot of controversy. You know, a lot of people on one side and a lot of people on the other. And I think as it dragged on and on, people got more and more sick of it because it just seemed like there was no good reason to be there in the first place, you know?
For sure. Did you notice any like significant changes like after the Vietnam War, like the ending of it, like politically?
There's always people in the government that prefer isolationism. You know, like we don't want to do that anymore. We don't need. We're not the world's policewoman or policeman. You know, we don't have to go in and take care of everybody. And then you've got the other people who, I mean, it was all about communism. That's what it was all about. You know. They didn't want the communists taking over more and more and more countries, and that's what they were fighting, communism. Because, I mean, we had that. In fact, in high school, we had to take a required course. It was called Americanism versus Communism, and they were the whole country was just rabid about communism, you know, about how they were gonna take over everything, and you had to be very watchful, and if they got anywhere near any country that had a democratic government, we'd have to go in there and get rid of them. I mean, I can remember in high school somebody came to our church youth group to talk about the evils of communism, you know.
Yeah. I didn't know you had a class
So,
about that. That's kind of interesting.
yeah. Oh, we had a required class, and it wasn't democracy versus communism or capitalism versus communism. It was Americanism versus communism.
Yeah.
You know, and it was required high school course that we had to take to learn about the evils of communism so we could go out there and fight it. And, of course, the closest communist country to us was Cuba. I mean, it was 90 miles away from us in Florida.
Yeah, that's crazy. I actually wanted to talk to you about the Cuban Missile Crisis. I'm sure
was
close to home for you.
Oh, yeah. I remember it well. I was a sophomore in high school, and it was scary. I mean, it was scary. We were so close to Cuba, and to see those photographs of missiles, it was terrifying. I can remember the tension in school, just everybody being together and being really worried that they were going to blow us up. After all, we've been hearing about how evil the communists were. And it was right off our shore, you know. That was very scary as a kid, you know.
Were you, like, relieved when it was over, I'm sure, or resolved, I guess?
Yeah. And I think that also helped Kennedy's image, in for me anyway, you know, that he kind of saved us from the Cuban missiles, you know, because we always felt really vulnerable, even in elementary school, because of Cape Canaveral and, you know, the rocket program and all that. I mean, that's a really short distance from Orlando.
Mm-hmm.
And when you're terrified of the bomb, you know, in sixth grade, in fifth grade, I'm sure you've seen these newsreels of kids duck and cover.
Yeah.
And that's what we were told to do. Put our hands, clasp our hands over our necks and get under our desk. Like that was going to save us from the bomb.
Yeah.
And we all had to wear dog tags with our name and all that stuff on it all the time. And this, to me, looking back on it, is the most insane thing. We would have drills where all the moms would bring their station wagons and all the kids from the school would pile in the station wagon and we would drive to get, this is what we were going to do, to get away from the bomb.
Yeah.
I mean, that is just crazy when you think about it now, you know, loading a whole school full of kids into your mother's station wagons and trying to drive away to beat the bomb, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, that's scary stuff when you're in elementary school, you know? So you combine that with, oh, you know, the communists are right off our shore and the missiles are heading toward us, you know, it caused a lot of worry.
Yeah, for sure. Could you expand a little bit more on the Cape Canaveral thing and, like, the space race and the moon landing?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, oh, yeah, the space race was a big thing. In junior high, I can remember everybody coming to the auditorium to watch the launch of the missile with the men on board. I mean, we studied about all the Russian dog that was in a space capsule, and you know, it was this race against we were going to do better than the Russians, you know.
Yeah.
And of course, in our front yard, in, you know, my parents' house, we could stand there and watch the missiles go up. You could see the trails from Cape Canaveral all the way to Orlando. And that was a common sight, just stand in our front yard and watch the missiles fly, you know. It was, and actually how it affected me personally was the schools, the state and the school system decided that in order to compete, we had to push our math and science programs, and they started what they called the accelerated program. And we all took these exams, and if you scored high enough, you were put in these accelerated classes once we got to junior high, with accelerated, you know, more math, more science, higher standards for everything. And that was a direct result of this space race.
Yeah. Remember where you were, like, in the moon landing? Like, and that was 69, I think.
Yeah. I was, we were in Philadelphia by that time. John was in seminary, and I can remember watching it on television. You know, everybody was glued to it. I mean, it was a huge, huge event. And, you know, it's one of those things you watch over and over and over again. It was just fantastic because, you know, growing up in the 50s, there were all these futuristic movies with space and rockets and aliens and all that stuff, you know?
Yeah.
And to see it actually happening, it was mind-boggling, really.
I'm kind of like rewinding a little bit, but can you talk about how television like affect, like, I don't know, like when that kind of started growing, but like, did that like affect your childhood in any way? Like, did your friends or your family have TV?
Oh yeah. I can remember, our first TV. We lived in Pittsburgh and I must've been in first grade, like 1953. We got a television, a little black and white thing. And I don't remember much. I don't remember watching it at that early an age. But when I lived in Orlando, and I remember watching all, I mean, we had very few children's shows. You know, we had the Howdy Doody show, and we had a funny show called Winky Dink, and what you were supposed to do was send away to and get like a special screen to put on your TV screen so you could draw on it with this Winky Dink thing, you know. And of course, we didn't have money to send away for that, but I remember drawing on the television screen, which was not smart, but we didn't have a Winky Dink screen.
Yeah.
You know, and of course, there were only three channels, and we did not have much children's TV except on Saturdays. We had Roy Rogers and Ren 10-10 and, you know, old Westerns, Gene Autry. And after school, there was a couple of shows. I remember American Bandstand was always on after school, which was something I was interested in, you know, all the new music and dances and stuff. But everybody I knew had a TV. But there was such limited viewing.
Yeah, there wasn't a lot to watch, right?
No. And, you know, we just were outside because we were in Florida. We were outside all the time. We really didn't watch TV much except maybe on Saturday morning.
I wanted to talk about the 1960s is obviously like the civil rights movement and stuff. I wanted to talk about like how growing up in the South, like what kind of like race relations did you see? Like, did you see segregation a lot? Like, what kind of like how that influenced your experience, I guess?
Okay. Well, growing up in Orlando, we moved there in 1954. And the whole South, including Orlando's, totally segregated. Totally. Everything you can think of. And I did not have any experience of black people whatsoever because I never saw any. They didn't live near me. I just never saw any. First experience I had, which obviously made a very deep impression on me and I think influenced my future crazy liberal movement, was that when we moved into the house where we lived for many years, it was a two-bedroom house, and there were already three of us, and my mother was expecting the fourth child. And so my father enclosed the carport for a bedroom for the boys. And we had black people working, building this bedroom.
Mm.
And it was Florida, it was hot. My mother took them glasses filled with ice water and gave them to the workmen. And after she brought them back to the kitchen, my father threw them in the trash. Like he wouldn't drink after those people.
Wow.
And he told them from then on, if they wanted a drink of water, they could drink out of the hose. And that, I was like 9.
Yeah, yeah.
And it just, I knew that wasn't right. I knew there was something really wrong with that. And it really bothered me, even as a little kid. And I just knew that wasn't right. I mean, my father was born in 1919 in Alabama, so his 100th birthday is coming up. And his views on African Americans were so backward. And as I got older and studied history, what they were the exact reasons that Southern slave owners published as to why slavery was good. To get, most of the South didn't own slaves, but they had to get even the poor white people on their side, And the things they said were exactly what my father said, and he was born in 1919,
yeah,
way after the Civil War, but they were still saying the same things. Like, they're not really human, their brains are smaller. And I can remember asking him, how can that be true? Think of all the smart black people in the world. And he goes, well, that's because they've got white blood in them.
Oh, geez. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that's what I grew up with. But I never bought it. I just knew it was wrong. And interesting, I asked my mother about, what her relationship was with black people. And she said, in southwestern Virginia, there weren't any. And she never saw any black people till she went to Alabama to meet my father's family. So she didn't have those views. But my father sure did. And I was working for Head Start in, 66 and 67. And my father used to try to goad me. And he would ask things like, well, how are the little pickaninnies today? He was just a racist. There's no other word for it, And he wasn't even ashamed of it. That's just the way it was. And I think one of the things that really brought it home to me was when I was working for Head Start, in the summer, I was a teacher's assistant, and the teacher was a young black woman. And we walked into town to Winter Park to get lunch one day, and we walked into this restaurant called the Copper Kettle. I'll never forget it. And walked in the door, and the guy behind the counter just gave us this look that could kill you right there. And he shook his head and told us to get out. I mean, he wouldn't serve us because I was with a black woman. And I was so mortified for her and so embarrassed that this is what she has to endure. And this was, you know, 1966, 67. I was just with her. I didn't have to do that every day of my life, you know. If you riding the bus, my mother didn't drive, so if we wanted to get to downtown Orlando, we'd take the bus, city bus, and it was just normal. The black people rode in the back. They walked right past everybody and sat in the back.
Yeah.
The way it was. And nobody thought anything of it.
Do you think that kind of, like, influenced, like, I don't know, did you participate, like, in civil rights protests or anything like that? I'm just kind of curious.
I never really did. I went to an LBJ rally in downtown Orlando, you know.
Yeah.
When he was running.
That's cool.
But that's closest I ever got. But I think working for Head Start, you know, because all the kids in the program were black, and just knowing that these little 3- and 4-year-olds had to come to this because their education was so bad, what they were going into, these segregated schools, that they were, you know, trying, and this is a Johnson program, you know, trying to give them a little leg up to compete with the rest of the world. I was never a marcher. I just tried to do my little part on my own, mostly.
Yeah, no, that's cool. I think growing up in the South kind of definitely would influence, like, your thoughts on that.
Yeah. And it's interesting because nobody I really knew, I was thinking like that, you know? I don't know why I started leaning that direction, but it wasn't because everybody I was hanging around with felt that way, that's for sure.
Yeah, you were kind of, like, detached from, like, your friends and beliefs and stuff.
Yeah, I was doing the opposite, really.
Could you talk a little bit about, like, gender norms and stuff, like, while, especially, like, when you were, like, really young and, like, were a teenager?
Okay. Well, you know, the birth order of my siblings, I have an older brother, and then there's me, and I have a younger brother and a much younger sister. So I can remember as a little kid not being allowed to do the things my younger brother could do because I was a girl.
Mm.
You know, like the elementary school was at the end of our block. And in the summer, they had programs in the summer. And, you know, we would just walk down there and play in the playground and swing. And I wasn't allowed to go, but my younger brother was. And that annoyed the heck out of me, you know, just because I was a girl.
Yeah.
I couldn't go down there by myself. And, of course, the boys did the outside work, the yard work and washing the cars and all that, and I did the inside work, cleaning and doing the dishes and all the ironing, and, you know. But the boys never did. They never washed a dish or ironed a shirt. In fact, I ironed my brother's shirts, you know?
Yeah.
That's just the way it was divided up. And I think growing up in the South, you the big thing was to be a lady and to be a proper young lady. And, you know, you didn't want to be too athletic or too smart because then the boys wouldn't like you, you know. So even if you were really smart or really athletic, it was expected that you would kind of tone it down around boys because, you know, they had to feel superior because they were male.
Yeah, kind of along with that, did you ever feel, like, pressured into, like, wearing makeup or, like, pretty clothes or anything? Like, standards of beauty, kind of?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you know, all the cool girls in my school, of course, we didn't wear uniforms. Girls had to wear a dress.
Mm-hmm.
Or a skirt. You were not allowed to wear pants. And, of course, the popular girls were the fashion icons. Everybody wanted to dress like they did. And, you know, the Papagallo shoes, those were in. They were the special expensive shoes. And I couldn't compete at all because my mother made all my clothes.
Yeah.
I never had store-bought clothes. And I you know, in some ways, because I was so small, I think it made more sense for my mother to make clothes. And they didn't have any money, you know?
Yeah.
I can remember looking in the store windows at clothes with my mother and her saying, oh, I could make that for $3, you know, and she would, you know, she was very aware that I wanted to be in style. You know, I can remember her making a wraparound skirt and a jumper that I wanted and a blouse with a Peter Pan collar. You know, those were all the things all the popular girls were wearing, and everybody wanted to be like that. And I never even imagined going out and buying clothes. I never did. She made everything.
Yeah, that's really interesting.
Yeah, it was.
Yeah, I like how you sew now too, right? Like it's kind of passed on, that kind of stuff.
Yeah, well, of course, her mother sewed to make a living, so it kind of came down the generations there. But, you know, hairstyles and makeup, it was all very trendy, and all the girls wanted to look alike, and all the boys had crew cuts and, you know, skinny belts and pants with loops on the back and, you know, whatever the flat fashion and penny loafers. You know, everybody were very, compliant with.
Mm.
There weren't many rebels in my class in high school.
Kind of like so, conformist, kind of like, yeah same.
Everybody was very conforming to, you know, what was in style. I mean, the people on the fringes of my high school were, you know, just thought of as, like, totally weird. Like, the people who were in Future Farmers of America. I mean, they were just, like, so out of it, you know, that it was just not cool.
Yeah. I'm kind of going forward again, like way forward, but I was wondering if you could talk about like the end of the Cold War, because I know that you were in Germany for a while there. And I was like, what are your thoughts on that, I guess?
Well, that was really interesting because, we were stationed in Germany 1985 to 88, and the Cold War was definitely going on still. At first, we were stationed up in northern Germany, which was called the British sector, because after World War II, the victors divided up Germany into, there was the French sector, the British sector, the Russian sector, and we were up north in the British sector. But it was definitely very close. I mean, the Cold War was a real thing, and it was definitely affected us. In northern Germany, the Germans were getting sick of us being there, of the Americans and the British being there, and there were protests by the Germans quite often when we were there, which, we were told to just stay away from. And of course, Berlin was divided because Germany was divided. And we could take the troop train from where we were stationed. You could go from Bremerhaven to Berlin. And of course, when we crossed into East Germany, the East German and the Russian guards would come on the train. The train would stop, and they'd come on the train with rifles, and everybody had to show their papers and all that. And you should ask your mother about that. All three of my girls hated that. They were
Yeah.
really scared when those soldiers came on the train. That was scary with their German Shepherd dogs, and it was very frightening. And once we got to East Berlin, of course, the service member had to wear the uniform when we went into East Berlin. So, and they were told that if there was any trouble, that they had to try to find a Soviet officer because they were supposed to be our allies, But, it was kind of scary, actually, going into East Berlin to me. There was bullet holes everywhere, and nothing was rebuilt, and the cars were falling apart, and people just looked like they were living in poverty to me.
I'm
But
just gonna give you a time warning here. I only have about
okay.
like 2-ish minutes before this like recording stops, but yeah, but you can keep going.
Oh, well, that's, I mean, it was just very, you could, there was tension in the American troops and their families, especially in Berlin. You could feel it, and you had to go past Checkpoint Charlie, and you had to go by the wall, and there was a, it was frightening,
Yeah, I
especially children,
imagine.
I'm sure. And when the wall came down, I remember we were in Princess Anne, and I can remember the kids, my kids, saying to their classmates, "Oh, I was in East Berlin." And of course, nobody believed them because nobody from the Eastern Shore ever went anywhere.
Yeah.
But I can remember watching that on television when the wall came down and thinking how totally different it must feel now, It was pretty tense, even in the late 80s.
Yeah, I imagine. Okay, cool. I'm kind of out of time here, but
Okay.
thanks so much for agreeing to talk to me and stuff, and I really enjoyed hearing about like all your stories and stuff. I didn't know a lot of that kind of stuff about you. It's really interesting.
Oh, well, anytime you want to talk off the record, I'm be glad to talk to you about any of it. It's interesting to me that my life is now ancient history, you know?
Yeah.
It still feels like yesterday to me, but it's really interesting to look back on it and see how I was brought up and how I lived shaped